Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Believe it or not, it's already Wednesday here on Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and Dan is gone for what apparently is one more day, so Schomburg Stu is here to fill in again.
What's going on, people in listen to the number one show in sports blog radio, right?
Sure, I'll take that. So I have no problem with promoting that, even if it's not true. But all right, if you want to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, since it is Wednesday, there was a new blog up this morning, so you can get over there, check that out when you get the chance. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you want to hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, we greatly appreciate that. There's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. And sadly, we still did not get Stu a Twitter account, but I am out there on Twitter at time if you'd like to hunt me down. So there you go. So, oh boy, well, man, I took it on the chin last night in FanDuel. My lineup did not hit, and I produced a whopping 58.7 points. So,
no casting.
No. We have to file that one away and just forget it happened and move on till today. So, here's what I came up with for today. I did spend some money on pitching today. I went with Robbie Ray of the Arizona Diamondbacks. He's pitching against the Padres tonight. Cost me $11,400. So I had to attempt to hunt down some value here and there throughout the rest of the lineup, and I think I did okay. Catcher, I went with Austin Barnes of the Dodgers. He's hitting six for them tonight. Cost me $2,100. First base, I have Jesus Aguilar of the Brewers. He's hitting fifth in their lineup. And he's only a $2,300 player. He doesn't get a ton of playing time, so his money value is way down. Second base, I got Daniel Murphy of the Nationals for $3,500. He's hitting third for them tonight. Sticking with the Nationals again, I got Anthony Rendon at third base for $3,800. He's hitting fifth for them. Shortstop, I'm going with Carlos Correa of the Houston Astros again. He didn't do squat for me last night, but he's facing James Shields tonight, and somebody in that Astro lineup is going to hit off him. He's hitting cleanup, cost me $3,400. My outfield starts with Josh Reddick of the Astros. He cost me $3,600. He's hitting second tonight. Then I went for $2,600. I'm going with Austin Hayes of the Baltimore Orioles, who's leading off for them. You know, I always like those leadoff guys down towards the bottom of the money. And then to wrap it up, I got Ezekiel Carrera of the Toronto Blue Jays for $2,200, and he's leading off for them tonight. So I'm taking those extra at-bats over spending money on some bigger guys, and, well, basically I didn't have the money. But here's the recap. Robbie Ray is my pitcher. Austin Barnes is my catcher. Jesus Aguilar at first. Daniel Murphy at second. Anthony Rendon at third. Carlos Correa at short. And the outfield is Josh Reddick, Austin Hayes, and Ezekiel Carrera. This, of course, is for the 605 main league on FanDuel. So you got about an hour and a minute to get your lineup in. And, man, hopefully you did better than I did yesterday. Good Lord.
It sounds like some of your choices were a little more frugal tonight than last night.
Yeah, well, you know, I spent all that money on pitching because I'm hoping to get a really good performance out of Robbie Ray in San Diego. You know, it's not the best hitter's park. So I'm hoping that works out for me. But, you know, when you do that, then you got to find ways to save money at other positions. And you got to find those right low-money guys to win. And I'm hoping I got them tonight. I tried to go with guys who are in good hitter parks, and I'm hoping they produce.
Yeah, I'm a layman, so I have to ask you one question. Are you allowed a DH, which would give you 10 players?
Yeah, no, not in this one. Yeah, I mean, you can actually use a DH, like if it's a guy who is regularly their DH, FanDuel will have him in a position. You know, like Victor Martinez, who I think has played minimal first base and catcher for the Tigers this year before he got hurt. He would always be in one of those spots. So you could use the player. There's just no actual DH slot for it.
Got it. Well, maybe you'll do better than last night.
Yeah, you know, you have your ups and downs when you do these things. And sadly, I've been a little more down than up as of late, so I'm due to get a little bump here in these last couple weeks. But, you know, we'll see. And, of course, being that it's Thursday, we did have some early action. We have three finals and one game still going on. So just real quick, the rundown here. The Miami Marlins beat the New York Mets 9-2. Jose Urena got the win. Rafael Montero took the loss. I don't know why Urena couldn't get a win when I used him in FanDuel. The A's beat the Tigers 3-2. Daniel Megden took the win. Liam Hendricks picked up a save for the A's, while Anibal Sanchez took the loss. And then the Yankees really took it to the Twins. They beat them 11-3. Jason Shreve got the win, and Bartolo Colon took the loss there. The game's still going on right now. The Giants lead the Rockies 4-0. Looks like, according to my update here, there's two outs in the bottom of the seventh inning. So we'll see if I remember, and the game goes final before we're off the air, I'll let you know who won. But no promises there, because sometimes I forget these things.
That would be a bad loss for the Rockies, because they're just hanging in there for the second slot at the moment, aren't they, in the wild card?
Yeah. Yeah, they have picked an incredibly poor time to struggle. Let me see if I can get their stuff here. They've dropped two in a row. This would be three, but you're talking about losing to a team like the Giants, who have pretty much been out of it since Bumgarner got hurt. Where are we here? Come on. There we go. Right now they have a one-game lead over the Brewers. So, of course, if they were to lose, that would drop to a half a game. Are the Brewers playing tonight, or are they off before the Cubs?
Yes,
they're playing tonight. I got Aguilar.
They're playing Pittsburgh.
I got Aguilar in my lineup. Of course they're playing, right? So, yeah, if the Rockies lose and the Brewers win, we're looking at a tie for that second wild card spot. You know, for the longest time, it looked like Colorado was just going to run away with Arizona and kind of hide. But apparently they're, you know, like I said, they picked a bad time to hit the skids here.
It looks like, though, Arizona's a lock for one of the wild card slots, I would think.
I gotta wonder how a team is gonna feel. Like, if Arizona wins that wild card, you know, they're kind of rolling at the right time. You would think Greinke will probably go in the wild card game, so they'll have to burn him. But, you know, Robbie Ray has pitched really well. You know, I know Patrick Corbin struggled his last time out, but he's been, you know, pretty good as of late. I don't know if you want to run into this team in a five-gamer, right, in the division
right.
series?
Yes, correct.
So, yeah, I'm not sure, man, if you want to cross paths with that, because you figure even if they burn Greinke, you know, obviously he's going to be able to come back in, you know, probably game three. So, you know, yeah, they would be an interesting team.
They could give the Dodgers a battle.
So, yeah, and, you know, they've had good luck against the Dodgers. And, you know, you look at their other guys. I was drawing a blank on some of their names. Tajon Walker, you know, his ERA is 3.45 in the 26 starts he's made. And then Zach Godley, who got the start last night, he's at 3.20. So, you know, they're not giving up a ton of runs. And, you know, they can hit.
Oh, yes, no doubt about that.
You know, I mean, Goldschmidt, of course, you know, he's an MVP contender again. You know, it seems like every year they talk about him. You wonder if Arizona getting into the playoffs would be a big positive for him. But, you know, they went out and acquired J.D. Martinez. You know, according to all the reports, they gave up pretty much nothing to get him. He's hit 24 home runs in 53 games since being with Arizona. That's just nuts.
Yeah, that's insane. That's insane. Project that over a full season.
So, yeah, that's what, 200? No, not quite that high, but it seems like
not quite that high, but It would be Mark McGuire type number.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, the rest of our lineup has been, you know, solid enough to carry him. You know, David Peralta's hitting right around 300. More importantly, AJ Pollock's been healthy. His numbers aren't quite back to where they were before he got injured, but, you know, he's played in 103 games. He's hitting about 270. You know, and again, the big plus is that he's just been healthy. So, yeah, I mean, they're kind of a, you know, a scary team. You know, again, they have to get out of the wild card game.
I figured they would get out of the wild card game, but that's not a given either.
Yeah, you know, and they'll be hosting the wild card game, so they at least won't have to travel for that. But you know, it's going to boil down right now to, you know, they play in the Rockies, they play in the Brewers, or God forbid, you know, the Cubs fall into that spot and have to go to Arizona.
I don't want to think those thoughts, but as we've talked before, though, I remember that one year when the Cardinals snuck into the wild card, and I think they wound up 83-79, and then they won it all. They won the wild card, they won everything. They won the World Series. So things happen. Unexpected things can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and the Giants did that just a couple years back as well. You know, they got in as the wild card team, and you know, as long as you're hot rolling in, it doesn't matter. All you got to do is get in. So
that's it. Once you're in, that's anything.
You know,
Has and you may know.
You know,
go ahead. Then I want to ask you something. I was going to say, has MLB ever discussed the possibility of extending the first round to a best of seven rather than best of five?
You know, I'm sure it's been talked about, but I don't know if they've ever really made it public with anything like that. A lot of the talk seems to be about possibly expanding the wild card series to three games.
Yeah.
But that's one of those things. I don't know if they would ever do that because, you know, then you've got, you know, six teams sitting around waiting for a wild card winner.
Right. Well, the thing is, I guess, compared to any other of the major sports, is that there's just so many games during the course of a regular season that it would be kind of difficult to even extend it that way. Although they both make sense. Two out of three makes sense, and even extending it to seven in the first round makes sense. But how many games can they play? I mean, they're...
Yeah.
Yeah, compare them to basketball or hockey or any of the sports.
Yeah, well, you know, I really like... John Smoltz had an idea that, you know, when the wild card team advances, their negative or whatever you want to look at it is for the NLDS is they should only be allowed one home game because they are a wild card team and they didn't win a division. So, you know, it should be game one and game two at the host team, then game three goes to the wild card team, and then four and five would be back to the division winner. I really liked that idea. I think that's a fantastic reward for the team that, you know, has the best record in your league because, you know, otherwise, you know, what do you get for it? You get home field advantage, but in reality, that doesn't even work out most of the time.
That's an interesting suggestion. That is certainly an interesting suggestion, although I seriously doubt if it would ever be implemented myself.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, the sad part with baseball is, you know, a lot of the best ideas just go by the wayside because, the old guard doesn't like it or, you know, however it works out. So,
yeah, another thing I want to bring up, and then we've talked about this before, it really bothers me when a championship team has poor attendance. And I believe Houston, of course, they've already clinched. Their attendance was very poor last night. I don't even know if they had the 50, 60% capacity at their ballpark. And imagine that happening in at Wrigley Field or any of the other ballparks.
We talked about it before. You know, Cleveland has always drawn poorly.
Yes.
You know, even though they've been winning, you know, the last few seasons, you know, they're a terrible attendance draw. And I know, you know, remember the Braves when they had those great teams with, you know, Glavine and Maddux
right,
and Smoltz
right.
and they
yeah,
were winning division title after division title. They couldn't sell out.
No, not even close. Not even close.
So
I give Cleveland a little prop, though, because they did increase their attendance during that long winning streak. As I mentioned the other day, when they won the 21st, 22nd, they were about 80% capacity, which is better than a lot better than they usually get drawn during the regular season.
Yeah, you know, the sad part is even with drawing that well during the winning streak, they're still 22nd overall in average attendance in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, that's a shocker, really, when you think about how well they've done the last couple of years, too. Well, here's my theory as to why their attendance is down. That guy with the drums drives you so crazy that the fans don't want to attend the games.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I probably couldn't sit next to him. I would probably end up killing him. But, you know, that kind of stuff happens. You know, some of the better teams with attendance, believe it or not, the Giants are third this year, even with their terrible record. And then the Blue Jays are sixth, even though, you know, they've been pretty much out of the playoff race for about the past month.
Yeah, that's pretty respectable, to say the least.
So, you know, and then, of course, the bottom. You know, the bottom is always the bottom. You know, Tampa's at the very bottom. Oakland is down there. Miami is down there. And then the White Sox have actually dropped down there to 27. They were kind of mid-pack when everybody was excited about the young kids coming up. But now that they've been here for a little while, attendance has kind of bottomed out. So, they're down there. And then it's Cincinnati and Pittsburgh are the bottom five teams drawing-wise in Major League Baseball.
When Oakland was a contender year after year after year, they drew better, though, didn't they? Or were they always low, even in those years, the glory years?
Yeah, you know, I think winning always helps. You know, it's a lot easier to support a winning franchise than it is, you know, obviously, you know, a perennial loser like the A's have been the last few years.
Yep.
But, yeah, you know, I don't know. Yeah, even back when Charlie Finley owned the team, I don't know if they were ever drawn, you know, sellout crowds or anything like that when they won a couple World Series and had, you know, Reggie and Joe Rudy and Bert Campanaris and those guys.
I'm trying to think back in 2005 when the White Sox won it all. I wonder how their attendance was during the course of the regular season. Was it better than usual, at least? It must have been a little bit better, but not great, I'm sure.
I can actually tell you they were 17th of that year. They averaged just under 29,000 at home.
And that's not for a championship team. That's not good.
No, that's not really good at all. But you know that's how it's always been. You know, Dan and I have talked about this a million times. You know, they're winning or not, they're not going to outdraw the Cubs. It just doesn't work like that in Chicago. You know, Wrigley Field is a place to be. There's so much to do around the park and all that other stuff where you go to, well, it's guaranteed rate now. That's all there really is to do. You know, you go to the ball game and you leave.
Yeah, even the name in the ballpark kind of grates on me, to tell you the truth. Not a very good name.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're drawing like that, you got to make money somehow.
Somehow, you got to do something, whatever it takes.
Yeah, you know, sadly, it's not like they're the only team that does it now. You know, just about every team sells their stadium rights.
And have you noticed that? I guess they've been doing this for a couple of years, but even on the Cub broadcast now, there's commercials between pitches sometimes. I mean, not just between innings. They toss in commercials between pitches. And, my goodness. It's bad enough to listen to those guys. And then I have to hear commercials.
Yeah, you gotta make that money. You know, that's players are making a ton of money, and so that's just how it is. But now I don't know if you saw this earlier today, you know, during that Yankee Twins game, Todd Frazier hit a bullet foul ball down the line, and sadly, it ended up hitting a little girl right in the face.
Yeah.
Luckily they said she was very responsive when she was taken to the hospital, and everybody is under the impression she's going to be okay. Hopefully, everything works out for her. But then I had to listen to, obviously here we have two sports radio stations. We have the one that ESPN owns, and then the one that is technically local, even though they're affiliated with CBS Sports. I had to listen to the two idiots in the afternoon explain that they didn't want to see this little girl die, but they think that if she did, it would make Major League Baseball put up more nets. Now, besides the fact that I was just appalled by what they were saying,
yeah.
They already did extend nets. They extended the nets. I think it was just this season. You can't net the whole field because obviously you ruin the enjoyment of watching the game. And while it's incredibly horrible what happened to this poor little kid, and hopefully she makes a full recovery, it's just one of those things that, can't be done. They need to get attendance. You can't do anything that's going to, make it drop.
I'm thinking that it's a mistake to take that one. What is she, 2 years old, the girl? Or
I believe the article I read said four.
I think they're just too young to go to. They're not going to be very attentive during the game. Of course, the adults aren't either. And
yeah.
They're prone to something like that happening. Now, I can see someone, an adult, jabbering at his phone during a crucial moment of the game, and a line drive gets him right in the kisser. Well, maybe I won't feel too bad if that happens. But the little ones are just an accident waiting to happen sometimes.
Yeah, well, I did see some adult, I guess you could call this gentleman this, on one of those down the line. It was earlier in the week, actually, I believe, or maybe in the end of last week, and had his glove and everything, went to make the catch and didn't touch it, took it right off the forehead. So even when you're paying attention, you can take one right off the noggin. So, obviously, I do wonder, and I'm not blaming anybody here, but I wonder, like, I didn't see it. So I'm wondering what she was doing when she got hit. Did she have her back turned? Was she watching the game? I know they said she was there with her grandparents. I mean, where were they? So
my guess is that she wasn't watching the game, but we'll never know one way or the other.
I just couldn't believe listening to these guys this afternoon, and I was like, really? That's your take out of it, is that, we have to extend the nets. Okay, well, how far do you want to put them down? I think they basically go just about to the dugout now. Are we just going to engulf?
They do. Yeah, that's a cold-blooded discussion as far as I'm concerned. I just kind of appalling to hear that.
Yeah, well, sadly, that's, that's how they are. You know how it is with radio. It's all about getting the ratings, and you've got to be the shock guy to get, people to listen to you and call you so you can demean them and humiliate them and make yourself feel better. Maybe that's why we don't get callers. So...
Well, that's a good theory. Anybody listening should call in now and give their support to the Big Jack.
Yes, then let me demean you. Of course, I actually don't do that when
we
get our actual callers. So, just one of those things. But we get to deal with all of them. So. We have to, we have to see. Now, I was trying to remember locally here with one of the, was it really, really small colleges? Didn't they just have an issue? I want to say it was Morton College. And they had, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head what it was, and I got to see if I can bing it here, and maybe I can get some kind of some kind of article on it, but I'm not having much luck. I heard just bits and pieces about it this afternoon about something that went on at one of the local football programs. And, you know, I saw it earlier, and for the life of me now, I'm not going to be able to find it because I wanted to ask you about it and see if you had heard or if you knew anything.
I didn't say anything about that, but it must have been, what is it, Division 4 or 5 or some small college?
Yeah, that's what I found odd was they were such a small college that I was really kind of baffled on, you know, what or why or how, you know, you would even kind of, you know, deal with something like that. I mean, I know the college itself is very, I believe somebody put it in akin to Footloose. You know, there's no dancing, there's no, premarital sex, you know, stuff like that. So
yeah. Sounds like Wheaton. Maybe it was Wheaton College.
Maybe
they're pretty.
Maybe it was Wheaton and not Morton. So
Wheaton is certainly in the Bible Belt, that's for sure.
Maybe I'll have to it was Wheaton College. I apologize to anybody who goes to Morton for screwing up the name there. But yeah, they had originally, it was 5 members of the team, and what they, you know, and it's now of course described as a hazing incident, but apparently there was a 6th person charged. And you know, this kind of, again, I guess it just kind of baffled me, but they're being charged with aggravated battery, mob action, and unlawful restraint. Apparently they said a freshman teammate was restrained with duct tape, beaten, and left half naked with 2 torn shoulders on a baseball field.
Incredible.
So, yeah, that was just...
That's just a horrible thing. And it's not even, you think that they would... A college like that wouldn't be prone to doing something like that. It just doesn't make sense. But this took place a while ago. This took place last year, right? Is that?
I believe they were saying, it's from an incident. Yeah, it's a hazing incident from 2016. I don't know where they were last year on all this. Maybe the player just didn't want to come forward or... You know, who knows, you know, how those kind of things work out. But, yeah, I think, you know, like the thing that surprised me is, like, I get it. You know, you're at a big-time program. You know, maybe you're going to Alabama or Ohio State or one of these other schools that's always contending for the title. You know, I can understand there's going to be a little hazing if you're the new guy. This is Division III. And while I understand they're a top-ranked Division III program, I believe the article I said they're 4th in the nation. It's not like the NFL is going to be lining up to even scout these guys. And you know, you would think they would be a little smarter and just kind of understand you are legitimately here to get an education. Why? Yes, you're a football player. And, you know, that probably still carries some weight on campus because, you know, you got to be a football hero, of course. We all know those
right.
Lyrics.
Yes.
You know, you just wonder what in the hell these guys were thinking.
You know, there are hazing, and then I was reading a little bit about this incident. And let's put it this way. I'll try to be as easy as possible. But they tried to insert an object where it shouldn't be inserted. Let's put it that way. That was kind of the hazing, and this is to me that's a criminal offense. That is criminal offense.
Yeah,
I mean, forget about hazing. That's punishable by some kind of a prison term or something. It seems to me that this can't go on like that.
You know, and again, that's, you know.
It's just a horrible thing to do. I mean, the macho mentality, I mean, why would they do that?
Yeah, well, you know, what's even weirder for me, you know, as a low-level college football player, we never had, you know, anything like this go on. You know, I mean, obviously there was some, you know, some minor stuff. You know, sometimes guys were made to, you know, sing in, like, you know, their boxer briefs or, you know, I remember one time I had to go around and pick up all the shoulder pads on the field. You know, there were about 50 pair of shoulder pads laying around, and my hazing was I had to go and, you know, okay, you're going to go around and pick all these up. It's like, okay, great, here you go. You know, let's get out of the way. So
I would compare that to what happened in Wheaton, and I think you'll find that that wasn't too bad to do something like that. There'll be some hazing, but, I mean, come on. What they did was, as I, once again, I'll say it, a criminal offense.
Yeah. You know, and I believe, like, when, you know, Tim Tebow was drafted in the NFL, you know, his teammates had some fun with him, and they shaved his head so he would look like Friar Tuck from the Robin Hood, you know, cartoon where he had hair on the sides, but he was bald in the middle. You know, I mean, that's, you know, that's a little rough, but obviously it's going to grow back.
Right.
But, yeah, I just, you know, I heard about this, and I was... I was completely shocked. Yeah, it was just ridiculous.
Then the upshot of it was they left the guy nearly naked, half dressed, nearly naked, and it's sub in freezing weather.
Yeah. Here you go. Jeez.
I mean, is this the macho tradition now in terms of hazing, or do they carry it too far? Just unbelievable.
Yeah. You know, and I know in most programs, you know, they've really cracked down on that. I mean, hazing is just, you know, completely been legislated out. If you're caught doing it, you know, you could be suspended or have your scholarship revoked or even thrown out of school. So, I just look back and, yeah, you know, to me, it's just, I'm like, what are these idiots doing? You know, what were they thinking that made them take it this far? So,
I wonder if alcohol was involved.
Yeah, you wonder. You know, I mean, because I know they say, okay, well, there's no drinking. You know, of course, well, we all know what's going to happen there. That's, you know, that's
right.
How it goes. But, you know, just, yeah, I just saw that, and I couldn't believe it at first, because all I kept thinking was, this is a, you know, at the time I thought they were Division II, but it's like, this is Division III. You know, I mean, it's not even a major college football program where I could, you know, while I wouldn't agree with it going on, I could kind of see it going on. But, yeah, I was like, good Lord. I mean, these guys need, you know, they need to be arrested. They need to be put in jail. You know, let them learn the lesson the hard way, man.
Yep. That would solve a lot of the hazing issues over that have happened over the last few years. But that is really a repulsive thing to do.
So, all right. Well, I think we need to change the subject here, and I wanted to ask you about this. All right. Last night, Major League Baseball set a record already for the most home runs hit in a season. You know, I seem to be on the side of it not being good for baseball, but apparently, out of all the talking heads I've heard on TV, I'm the only guy on that side. How do you feel about this?
Well, it's obvious that something is what they did this year with the baseballs. They're causing them to be juiced like that. And when you think about it, it doesn't make sense that in this era, this modern era, there are that many home runs in a given season. Now that the steroids have been wiped out. However, there aren't that many players who have hit 40 home runs plus, right? You know, all the juicing of baseball. There's a lot of guys in the 20 category, 25, 30. But other than Stanton, how many have actually gone close to the 50 mark like he has, or over the 50 mark? Even 40.
Yeah, I'm looking that up for you right now as you talk. I will hunt that down. I know Aaron Judge is over 40.
Right.
But off the top of my head, I don't know who else is there. I have to pull up some stats here and get the totals for you, and then I can let you know. But yeah, you know, like I was saying, I seem to only be the only guy who thought it was bad that, you know, there were all these home runs.
So many of them, but and Judge is really symptomatic of what's wrong with baseball now, because yes, he's had a lot of home runs, RBIs, but how many slumps has he been in which he strikes out game after game after game without doing anything, because he's going for the long ball every time instead of being a situational hitter?
All right, here you go. I got it for you. Stanton is the leader at 56.
Right.
Judge has 45. J.D. Martinez has a combination of 40 with the Tigers and the Diamondbacks this year. Then Chris Davis of the A's has 39, so he should get the 40. Cody Bellinger, Joey Gallo, and Justin Smoke all have 38. So it looks like we're going to get, eight guys, maybe nine guys over 40?
Right, which isn't all that many. I mean,
yeah.
Don't forget, there's 30 teams, and, you know, that is not that many, just that so many in the 20-plus range, though, 20 to 30-plus range this year than ever before.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of guys. I mean, just looking at it by the numbers here, you know, they rank – there are 29 guys with 30 or more home runs. So, you know, it's definitely spread out. And, you know, that's part of the reason, you know, they've tested the baseballs, and they're different this year from last year. You know, I know Major League Baseball denied it, but there's no denying it. It's been tested. We know it's true. They did something to jack up the ball, and, you know, it's flying out of the park.
In this season, you said there's quite a few between 30 and 40, correct? What about their previous history prior to this year?
You know, I know there are a ton of guys I've heard have set career highs this year. You know, and they're not guys who look like they would be on anything. You know, they're not obvious steroid guys. So, you know, Mike Moustakas has 36. I believe that's the, if it's not the single season record for the Royals, he's right there getting ready to either tie it or break it. He's never hit that many before. You know, Logan Morrison is right there with 36. Charlie Blackman has 35. You know, all these are career bests for these guys. You know, and just kind of, you know, magically here we are. You know, hey, look, this guy's got so many.
Other than Blackman, what about their batting averages on some of these guys that are having career years and runs?
Well, you know, I know there are some that are just complete. You know, Joey Gallo is the guy who really jumps out. While he's got 38 bombs, he struck out 177 times in 133 games, and he's hitting .212. So he's kind of the antithesis of, you know, sabermetrics. This is exactly what sabermetrics is. Strikeouts don't mean anything. It's all about the home run. Nobody cares if you get on base. You just want power, and that's what he gives you. You know, he's basically the new Adam Dunn.
And I've always been an advocate that a major league ballplayer should hit .260 at least, a good qualified him. I don't care how many times he strikes out. If he hits a .260, .265 at least, which is respectable. These guys with the .210, .212 averages who hit all those home runs, I mean, is it really helping the team?
Yeah, you know, there aren't too many guys embarrassingly bad. There are some guys in the 240s. Until you get down, oddly, this is how you talk about a team here. Two more Rangers, Mike Napoli and Rougned Odor, both have 29 bombs. Napoli struck out 163 times in 124 games. Odor has struck out 149 times in 150 games. Napoli's hitting .193 and Odor is hitting .209. How are the Rangers in the war in the wild card race?
Yeah, now they're not, but
that's
ridiculously low batting averages. I don't care how many home runs they have.
And then
the league shouldn't hit that. You know, they wouldn't even be on a team in 20 years ago, 30 years ago with an average like that. They may have power, but
the last guy. You know, it looks like the last guy on the first list here, I'm not going to go searching through all the records, 28 home runs, 143 strikeouts in 120 games. He's hitting .208. You know who this is. Who is this?
I would think his first initial would be K and his last one would be S. That's all right.
There you go. Yep. Good old Kyle Schwarber clocks in at .208 this year. So...
208 is probably the highest average he's had all year.
Probably, unless he happened to go 1-for-3 or 1-for-4 opening day. So.
Yeah, he hit a bomb last night, that's for sure. But then, he looks to me disciplined at the plate, but he seems to strike out on pitches that are at least in the zone, unlike, say, Baez or Chris Bryan, who strike out on pitches really unhittable, you know, on the ground or way outside. He seems to be a little more disciplined, so he surprises me with all the strikeouts and his low batting average. Any suggestions as to what causes that?
He's been better the second half of the season than he was the first half. I guess you got to wonder how much pressure was on him coming off, you know, the World Series, and he was kind of pinned as the next guy, and, you know, being on a team like he's on, I mean, they have stars. You know, Bryant's a legitimate star, Rizzo's a legitimate star. You just wonder if maybe he was pressing, and, you know, I'm sure a little of it had to do with, we've seen guys go through this. Eventually the league catches up with you.
Yeah. That's right. That's a leave of good adjustments. You have to make adjustments on both pitchers and hitters.
Yeah, you know, Aaron Judge went through it in the second half of the season. You know, he was great in the first half. I mean, they were talking about him being the MVP and, you know, all that other stuff. And then, we got to the second half and they had tape on him and they had seen him quite a bit. And, all of a sudden he had some issues. And, the Red Sox brought up that rookie Rafael Devers, and he was monstrous to start, and, you know, then you get a book on a guy.
Yep. And I'm trying to think of the Dodger player they sent to the minors that had such a great rookie year last year for the first few months and then tapered off, and they finally sent him down this year. And
Jock Peterson.
That's correct. Thank you for helping me out there, because I'm assuming they probably brought him back up by now, of course, with the expanded rosters. But he was a next superstar, and they found his weaknesses out pretty quickly after the first few months.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Dan and especially Mr. Fantasy do that all the time. You know, they'll be like, yeah, that guy. You know that guy? Yeah, the guy I'm talking about. Okay, hang on. I know who you're talking about.
So, I'm used to that. You always come to our rescue, which I appreciate.
They figured him out, and, man, did he strike out after that.
Unbelievable, so. It's a matter of adjustments, and it's the batter who can make the necessary adjustments that succeeds and has a long career in baseball.
Yeah, all guys go through it. You know, I mean, even a guy like Jose Abreu, who really was a veteran when he came over here, you know, he played in Cuba forever.
Right.
You know, he was hot right away, and then they kind of figured him out, and now he's made, you know, it's just constant adjustments as a hitter. So.
And I really applaud him for doing that. And he's going to wind up with, another 100 RBI year? For the fourth year in a row?
Yeah.
He's close to it. I know he's very close to it.
I think he drove in his 98th run last night. So, barring some kind of injury, he's going to get there. That shouldn't be an issue at all.
And he's got, what, 30 home runs again this year?
Yeah, did he cross the 30? You got to figure he did with the kind of power he has this year. Yeah, he's actually at 31 right now. Yeah, 31 right now.
There's only two other players besides himself that have done that in the first 4 years. I know Joe DiMaggio is one, and at the moment I can't remember the second one, but that there's only three players in history that have started out and driven in 100-plus runs in their first 4 years and hit 30 home runs plus the first 4 years.
Yeah, well, he didn't make 30 home runs last year. He only hit 25.
Oh, okay.
So
maybe I'm thinking of RBIs then or batting average, because I know he was in pretty exalted company. When you mentioned Joe DiMaggio, you're talking about one of the all-time best players.
Yeah, anytime you can, bring up that name when you're in comparison to somebody, you're not gonna argue with that. But yeah, I did find it humorous. I know I mentioned it to you in the email yesterday. You know, the Cubs, they beat Chris Archer last night, who actually pitched a really good game while he was in there. And what I thought was humorous was, Archer at one point in time was actually a Cub prospect.
Yes, he was.
But he was shipped off to Tampa Bay I actually have the deal here. I looked it up. In return for Chris Archer, Robinson Chirinos, Sam Fold, Brandon Guyer, and Hak-Joo Lee, the Cubs got Matt Garza, Fernando Perez, and Zach Roscup.
Oh, that's a deal for you, right?
So, yeah, sadly, the deal didn't go too well for the Cubs.
No,
Garza,
no.
When they acquired him, he had all the potential in the world. I mean, he was the guy to have. But, it's just never really kind of worked out.
Yeah, he always looks like he has good stuff, and he potential of having a very solid year, but he always seems to get hurt too. Spends a lot of time in the DL and never achieved what everybody thought he was going to achieve.
Yeah, well, the Cubs got him coming off a 15-win season, and it looked like he was going to break out. He did go 10-10 for him that first year there with a 3.32 ERA, and he made 31 starts. That was actually the last time in his career he's made 30 or more starts. Luckily for the Cubs, the deal they shipped him off on worked out okay for him. When they sent him to Texas, in return they got Carl Edwards, Justin Grimm, Mike Ault, and then Neil Ramirez as a player to be named later. So at least they were able to acquire some useful pieces in return.
Yeah, well, it's too bad. I guess Old is still flailing away somewhere in the minors, but unless he just retired, because he never worked out as a third baseman, that is for sure.
Yeah, once he got that eye problem, that was pretty much the end of it for him.
Yeah. They claimed that they fixed it, but evidently they didn't.
So, yeah, because he was a top prospect for a while. Here you go. He actually he spent this year in the Boston Red Sox Double A organization. Played 113 games, hit .245 with 16 homers and 57 RBIs.
And that's in Double A.
Yeah. So he's still plugging away. He's 29 years old. So you don't know how much longer he'll be around. Obviously he didn't get a September call-up. So.
No. Well, Boston always seems to get a lot of the Cubs' retrades, like Ault, and then, of course, Mark, as we discussed the other day, Mark Fryer.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
It's odd how – they do that to each other. The Cubs were picking up any Red Sox that was let go.
Yeah, Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it could be the end of the line for him, I'm afraid.
Yeah, you got to figure, you know, you wonder how much longer. I mean, it's cool that, you know, he loves the game and, you know, he wants to keep trying. And, you know, again, like I said, he was a, you know, a big-time prospect. And, you know, once that injury came along, it just derailed him.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he, you know.
It's too bad. You know what? You always want to see someone succeed at the major league level, but it doesn't always happen.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, even like, you know, Neil Ramirez was a key piece to their bullpen early on.
Yeah, he was.
You know, he did pretty well with the Cubs. Oddly, since leaving the Cubs, though, he hasn't done much. You know, he's pitched for both the Giants and the Mets this year, but very minimally. He's appeared in 29 games.
He had a couple of good years with the Cubs, though, right, if I remember correctly. A couple of decent
years.
Yeah,
he had the 1 year, 2014, he appeared in 50 games, and he had a 1.44 ERA. You know, and then next year he was dinged up a little, but he still appeared in 19 games with a 3.21 ERA. But then, yeah, after that, he's really struggled. You know, he bounced around, you know, Milwaukee, Minnesota, San Francisco, and the Mets. Just hasn't been able to find it.
And
but, yeah, you know,
I'm sure there's some arm issues, though, involved. You think after that potential and having a couple of good years, there has to be some arm issues involved.
Yeah, for a couple of years, he was a quality setup guy. So.
Yeah, he was.
No, still a young guy. He's only 28, so.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of Sam Fuld also, who wound up having a couple of decent years in other organizations.
Yeah, once he got a chance to play, you know, obviously there was no spot for him every day with the Cubs. It just wasn't going to happen. But, you know, once he got an opportunity, he did okay. You know, His last year with the A's, he really struggled. I just pulled it up here. He had a .197. But, you know, I mean, he had some solid years. And obviously, you know, the plus side to Sam is he was a great defender. You know, he could play all three outfield positions. He definitely could play defense. So, you know, but yeah, he just wasn't going to be a starter in the majors. So
certainly DJ LeMahieu had a nice career after he left the Cubs.
Yeah, that, you know, definitely a guy, you know, you wonder how it would have worked out if they would have, if they would have held on to him. I believe he won the National League batting title last year. Well, not too much. He hit .348 to win the title. He's hitting .315 this year.
Oh, wow.
So.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
I thought he was lower
but,
than that.
You know, there were a lot of questions with his defense. Oddly, he actually won a gold glove in Colorado in 2014. So I guess those kind of worked out. But, you know, that was one of the big issues. And he only had the 1 year with the Cubs at the major league level. You know, they were, you know, going in a different direction. And, it just kind of went that way. Oddly, though, the big thing, and, you know, Dan would hate this. I don't think I've ever read this trade to Dan, but LeMahieu went with Tyler Colvin to Colorado. In return, the Cubs got Casey Weathers, who I don't believe ever pitched in the majors for him, and Ian Stewart. And Dan hates Ian Stewart with a passion.
Well,
so,
I can't blame him for that. I tell you, I have to agree with that. He was pretty arrogant about it, and the fact the Cubs paid him while he was injured, recovering from injuries.
Yeah.
And he complained about the Cubs after he left that organization. I don't think he ever did too much, though. Yeah, he was pretty bad. I mean, that was a pretty bad acquisition for the Cubs, no doubt about that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that was early on in the rebuild when, they went that route. So, you know, they learned.
No, I'm not sure. You know, I'm sure. You know, the new organization, the new management, it's a matter of there's skill involved in selecting players, but I think the Cubs making all those good selections, yeah, there's some luck involved too. Not all these potential guys really make it. Yes.
Yeah, it's, you know, baseball is really probably the most difficult sport to draft in. Yeah, because, you know, you just don't know what's going to go on with these guys. I mean, you know, how many times have you heard the term can't miss prospect and he misses?
Yeah.
So, you know, or you get a situation where, you know, the Twins, you know, Byron Buxton was the number one prospect for years. Definitely, I think it was 2 or 3 years in the minors. They brought him up and he couldn't hit his weight. You know, he couldn't hit over 200. Finally, now this year, it looks like he's figured it out, but it literally took him 3 years at the major league level to figure it out.
It's amazing how patient sometimes a major league team will be if the potential is there.
So, yeah, you know. But, yeah, and I mean, you know, we've seen that time and again with guys.
Yeah, we're running low here, but I wanted to ask you, talking about prospects, this phenom is coming in next year from Japan. Not only is he Babe Ruth, he's a Babe Ruth pitcher type too. How you think he's going to have that much of an impact in the major leagues?
You know, I'm interested to see kind of, you know, A, of course, where he ends up.
Right.
And, you know, B, what they do with him, because, you know, everybody seems to think he can do both at the major league level. You know, that's a lot to pitch every 5 days and then go out and hit the other four.
Yeah. That's,
you think if he's going to do that, he's got to go with an American League team, right, so he can DH?
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Because, you know, you wouldn't want your pitcher's arm in the outfield having to make throws every day. You know, I mean, it's enough stress pitching every 5 days, let alone, you know, imagine if he's got to try to throw a guy out at the plate or from right field to third base or, you know, something like that. I don't think you'd want him doing that. But, you know, I mean, these Japanese guys haven't really came out over and, you know, mopped up with the exception of Ichiro. You know, they've all had their struggles and, you know, their issues. So you got to wonder, you know, is he going to be worth it? Because somebody's going to pay him a boatload of money.
Right. I know the Cubs are one of the teams, but they said that very slim, almost impossible chance they would get him.
Yeah, you know, it seems like everything I hear right now, the Yankees are the front runner, which is no surprise. That's,
No.
They're the team with money and, you know, that kind of deal. You know, yeah, like I said, I just, you know, I wonder where he fits or how he fits. You know, I know we talked about it the other day, you know, the Reds drafted and coming in, they didn't know what he was going to do. Was he going to be a shortstop? Was he going to be a pitcher? Well, he actually decided to be a pitcher. I don't know if this guy's going to decide.
Yeah, he, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. It's very interesting.
So, yeah, I just worry.
Yeah, I was going to say, you forgot about Fukudomi, one of those great Japanese players. How could you forget him?
For the first half of his first season, he was really good.
Yeah, that first game, especially.
All right, me, Chomper, Stu, and I are going to take off. We got to thank Stu for filling in for Dan these 3 days. So thanks for doing that, Stu. I greatly appreciate that. Dan is supposed to return tomorrow, so we'll be back at our normal time of 5:30. But Stu and I are really happy that you took the time to listen to us. We appreciate that. You know the deal. Get over to sportstimeradio.com, read that new blog, follow the link over to the Facebook page, and give that a like. Don't forget the Twitter feed, which is at sportstimeradio. You can find me on Twitter as well if you'd like to hunt me down. And now don't forget, the podcast is also available on TuneIn.com.